Our host needs no introduction.
His name is...
A name so simple it rolls right off your tongue.
His name is James... No, his name is... James Lawrence! Lawrence! Lawrence!
Try again.
Forrest Lone... Lars! Lars!
No!
Chuck Jaffe.
Yes! 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 We're like this!
I'll say it again so you remember, okay? This is Money Life with Chuck Jaffe.
Wow! 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 All I can say is wow!
Please do not overdramatize these proceedings.
And now, here's Chuck.
He's one in a million.
He sure is.
Good morning and welcome to Money Life. It's Money Life for July the 7th. I'm Chuck Jaffe, senior columnist for MarketWatch, host of this show. This show has been sort of amazingly confusing for me as your host. Why is that? Well, because we keep having changes to our day. It's all going to be okay. We're still going to bring you a great show. It's just not the show I thought we were going to have more than once as we were leading up to this. Now, some of that is because, well, I had hoped and tentatively had arranged to talk to a couple of different guests. First, it was Carl Mills from Jerika Mills and Kiefer, who's written a brilliant commentary. But his window, he actually was willing to talk to me while he was on vacation. And then his window of availability changed and we just couldn't make it happen. So we're going to talk next week. Then it was Doug Roberts, author of a book on following the Fed. We're going to talk Fed with Doug. But he was off at a Steely Dan concert last night. And he said, Chuck, we can connect after the concert's done, etc. Shouldn't have any problem. So we were going to do this basically, you know, getting close to midnight or what have you. And I've been to Steely Dan. I haven't seen him in concert in many years. They were fabulous. When I saw them, I was very envious. And the band played on. And so there came a point where Doug's like, can we talk another day? Yes, we can. So we're not going to do a big interview today. Instead, I'm going to be taking a really interesting, really savvy question that we got from an audience member. We'll do that between our regulars. Tom Lydon, of course, from ETF Trends, joins us for the ETF of the week to kick things off. Bob Powell from Retirement Weekly, Retire Mentors columnist at MarketWatch, joins us for Senior Focus. And then the Money Life Market Call, which today features Ernie Cecilia. And if that name doesn't ring a bell, it's because he's never been on the show before. That's right. It's somebody making their maiden voyage, which we know you like. It exposes you to some interesting things. And I think that's particularly the case here because Ernie is the chief investment officer at Bryn Mawr Asset Management. And they run about $9 billion on a fundamentals basis. They're very fundamentals driven. So that is a big plus, I think, for, you know, we talk a lot with momentum folks. We talk with a lot of folks doing different things. I think it's a big plus to be in a situation where we're saying, okay, we've got this happening and it's fundamentals based. It's been a while since we've had somebody who's really, you know, we have a lot of valuation guys and valuations are fundamentals. Yes, to a point. It's a little different than that. So we will have some fun talking to Carl, and that's our plan for today. I'm Chuck Jaffe, senior columnist for MarketWatch, host of this show every weekday. You will find my work online at MarketWatch.com when I am not here. And, of course, I am here a lot, an hour a day every weekday. Money Life is independent personal finance talk dedicated to looking smartly at a wide range of approaches and opinions on investing. It is not just what I like. It is what is going to work for you and help you get the most out of your investments. You've got to live in a world where disagreement makes a market. And so we're going to help you do just that. Quickly, it's time for my rules. I'm not allowed to make any new moves in securities we discuss on this show for 15 trading days after they're discussed. Anything I buy from my own portfolio must be held for a minimum of 6 full months, and I'm not allowed to sell anything short. And if anything I own comes up in conversation, I'll make sure that you are aware of it so you can factor my conflicts into anything you hear me say. I will also try to make sure that my guests do the same thing so that you can factor that into what you hear them say. Because that way, it's not that everything's conflict-free. It's just if it's all out there and it's all laid out for you, you can decide what's the appropriate way for you to respond to any conflicts. All right, with all of that out of the way, it's time to get busy. This is Money Life for July the 7th, 7-7. Yeah, I know. Don't go use the money on a lottery ticket. Too many people go play the date. It's bad karma. I mean, it's not bad karma, but it's just one of those things that, like, hey, if the odds of winning the lottery, you know, on a pick three, pick four, whatever, are this like 0707, yeah, you're going to go off and do that, or you're going to play 707 or whatever. Whatever those numbers are on days like today, you've got the people that always play the day or whatever. You get all those other sorts of things, and then you get all the numerology folks. And what that really means is that if you got lucky enough to win the lottery, like the little lotteries today, you'd get an even smaller win. Don't do that. Just go off and have some fun. But it is July the 7th. Thanks for joining us. Again, our lineup. Tom Lydon, to me, taking a question. To Bob Powell, and then Ernie Cecilia's maiden voyage in the Money Life Market Call. Thanks so much for joining us. The ETF of the Week kicks things off right after this message.
Looking for alternative ETF strategies? Direction provides separate and distinct audiences with flexible investment tools to manage risk and execute short-term strategies. For more information, go to directionshares.com.
Well, I don't favor talking to vermin, but I'll talk to you just this once.
Exchange-traded funds are the investment world's new frontier.
You better listen.
But with so many choices and styles, the ETF world is a bit like the Wild Wild West, filled with new issues and ideas, but fraught with the same old dangers of investing.
If you're looking for trouble, I'll accommodate you.
Every Thursday, Tom Lydon of ETF Trends comes to Money Life to tell us about one ETF that is wearing the white hat right now.
Take it easy. We are the good guys.
He'll point out the good, the bad, and the ugly as he tells you which investment is worth taking a shot on.
That's good shooting.
And names his ETF of the week.
Now, Wild West.
That's right. Tom Lydon is here to give us the ETF of the week. Tom, of course, the editor at ETFtrends.com. And if you are interested in all things ETF related, well, it's worth taking a look at ETFtrends.com because beyond, well, just the ETF of the week and the things that Tom sees happening broadly, you get all the information you need to be up to date on what's happening in the ETF world. The website, of course, is ETFtrends.com. On Twitter, at ETFtrends. Tom is on Twitter, at Tom Lydon. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chuck. Great to be back.
Our ETF of the week is
the Deutsche Xtrackers MSCI United Kingdom Hedged Equity ETF, ticker symbol DBUK.
DBUK, the Deutsche Xtrackers MSCI United Kingdom Hedged Equity ETF, DBUK. Well, let's see. That UK thing tells us pretty much all we need to know. So we're playing a post-Brexit world, and we're assuming that they're going through with it, or we're playing a post-Brexit world because, well, what the heck? There's going to be a lot of news here, and right now we should be okay with it.
Well, I think there's a lot of question, Chuck. I mean, most of us were surprised that that the vote went through. Now, today, there are many that are feeling still it may not go through. However, regardless, when you look at trends, the UK equity markets are above their 200-day average. That's a good thing. And hopefully, as world markets continue to stabilize, we understand there's volatility for sure, but most investors, through their asset allocation strategies, have money in the Eurozone, have money in the UK for sure. Now, one thing that comes into play here is this. In the UK, you can't necessarily control the markets, but what they can do is control monetary policy. And that's one thing that they have going for them. So with the idea that they're trying to settle the nerves of investors, not just in the UK, but in Europe and around the world, the banks in the UK may continue to provide easing. The Bank of England might even lower interest rates. In doing so, and in anticipation of doing so, we've already seen the pound sterling hit a level that we haven't seen in three decades, down to 128. So with this, here's the scenario within this ETF. If you're bullish on the equity markets in the UK, but you feel through movement with the Bank of England and monetary easing that the pound sterling might decline, this is a situation where you would benefit from the equity markets going up, but also be hedged against a decline in the pound sterling. It sounds a little bit complicated, but it's really easy within this simple ETF package. And if you've got an allocation overseas and you're worried about the currency risk, but you really like the valuations in the equity markets, here's another way where the ETF marketplace has gotten quite creative.
Is this a 200-day moving average play, and because of the headlines, you want to stay tight to the news? Or is this something where, because you are looking to be opportunistic off of current events, you're using a different metric?
Well, a couple things. It can be used in a few ways. Number one, if you have an international allocation and you believe that you want to hold on to it for an extended period of time, but your biggest concern is Brexit and the effect on the UK, you could actually carve out that portion of your allocation that either is directly invested in the UK or your European or international allocation that may be there and shift it over to this ETF. So what it would do is, number one, it would remain invested in equities, but it would remove that currency risk if you felt that the pound sterling was going to continue to decline. That's one case. The other case is, if you've got money on the sidelines and you feel like all this Brexit news might have been overblown, but you're still concerned about currency risk, you could follow this ETF on its own 200-day average. It's not that far above its 200-day average right now. If you pay close attention to your portfolio regularly and you see that there's value within the market, but you also want to hedge against currency risk, there's something there for you. The bottom line is, if you've got an allocation to the UK right now and it's not hedged, you actually long that currency. And I think a lot of people right now might feel good about being in equities in the UK, but a little concerned about being invested in the currency.
Yeah, quickly, because we are almost out of time, is the other way that somebody might want to play this, because of the currency hedge, just to say, let me kick over part of my European exposure this way?
Absolutely. And there are also similar ETFs that hedge the euro and hedge other foreign currencies too. So look at what Deutsche Aktientrackers have, look at what WisdomTree does, iShares. There are more and more ETFs that hedge currency, because currencies really are an asset class not really available to the average investor easily before, but now with ETFs, they are.
Again, it's the Deutsche Xtrackers MSCI United Kingdom Hedged Equity ETF, the DBUK, a really interesting pick. Yeah, it's going to take some nerves if you want to go do it, but if you want to look for an interesting opportunity, this is one. It's the ETF of the week from Tom Lydon. Tom, of course, is the editor at ETF Trends. Tom, thanks as always for joining us.
Thanks, Chuck.
Remember, you can follow up by going to ETFTrends.com. You can also follow them on Twitter at ETF Trends. And while you're at it, follow Tom. He's at Tom Lydon. All right, that is a great way to start the July 7th edition of Money Life. But we've got lots more to go, so settle back and relax. We're living the money life, and we will get right back to it in just a moment.
Hightower is a groundbreaking team of financial advisors committed to giving you access to best-in-class financial products and services, a practice often overlooked by brokers on Wall Street. Visit HightowerAdvisors.com to learn more about the Hightower difference.
Anybody have any questions?
I have a question.
I'm sorry, but all questions must be submitted in writing.
Oh, you can ask questions.
There's no question. My answer's obvious.
Well, there is question. And the answer may not be obvious to everybody. That's why people write me questions. So we're going to take, well, hopefully two today. And if you want to get in on the act and you want to ask me a question, send it to Chuck at moneylifeshow.com. Hopefully we'll get a chance to answer it. The first question that we got actually came in to C. Jaffe at marketwatch.com, but then was CC'd over to the show later, like, because I guess I hadn't answered it quickly. And it comes from Gail, who said, "Hi, Chuck. Every time the stock market takes a hit and we hear our 401k plan will diminish, we just can't help but wonder, where does all that money go to? That's real cash, tangible, green, tangible money. Certainly it doesn't just evaporate, correct? Someone must be getting the money somewhere, somehow. Do you know what happens to the lost money? How can it just disappear? With no accountability, it would be nice if it was transferred into our bank account, but that doesn't happen." Okay, Gail, this is a question that gets, it's funny. I think it was John Oliver who had a quote about somebody saying, after the Brexit, you know, that all this money had evaporated. And he said, money doesn't just evaporate. Yes, at least theoretically it does. Here's why we say that. Now, you say money doesn't just evaporate, and I just said it did. How is that possible? Well, when you own a share of stock, a stock is valued at basically what someone is willing to pay for it. And so when the market goes up, it's not that you're creating extra money. You're only locking that in if you sell. If you sell, somebody else is taking the risk of ownership and you have the profits. Then you have actual green, tangible money. But when you own shares of stock, or a mutual fund which owns shares of stock, or your 401k which owns mutual funds which own shares of stock, it's not tangible money. It is, this is what we own. And what we own is based on sentiment. So it's very simple. I don't normally think of it like collectibles or like grocery products, but it could be like either one of them. If you have a painting that is lovely, but was done by whoever your favorite artist is, your best friend, and not done by, say, Pablo Picasso, that painting is worth whatever anybody will pay for it. And maybe you'll pay a lot because it's your friend or what have you, and maybe I'd look at the same thing and I wouldn't pay a lot. And until you can cash it out, well, you can value it at anything you want. But until it becomes tangible green money, as you put it, it's not necessarily tangible green money. Right? So think of it this way. If today you've got shares of a stock, XYZ, and the market thinks that's worth $100 a share. Maybe the market thinks that because XYZ is a pharmaceutical stock with a nice drug in the pipeline. Tomorrow, news comes out, they're not going to get certain approvals. Now that nice drug's not in the pipeline, or it's much further off. Stock's not worth $100 anymore. Why? Because nobody will pay you $100 to buy it from you. In fact, they'll only pay you $50 now. So let's say that there's a million shares outstanding. They just went from being worth $100 million total outstanding market cap, the share price times all the shares, to $50 million. $50 million just evaporated. Where did it go? No place. No place. The company just lost that much in equity. Where did it go? It just evaporated. But if they then respond and in 2 weeks they come out and they say, we've got no problem here. It's actually going to go through. Look at this. This is actually going to make it happen. And now it goes from $50 to $150. Well, you just gained all that money on your balance statement. But it's not real tangible until it's turned into green money. That's the thing. So, no. The only way somebody is getting that money, per se, is if they're betting against you and shorting. And even then, they're not actually getting that money. They're just profiting from the action going in the other direction. It does just disappear when it comes to your 401k value. It does, because your 401k is worth the value of whatever the underlying securities are. And if tomorrow nobody will pay for something, think of it like when Lehman Brothers went out. Lehman Brothers was a valuable stock, and then Lehman Brothers was worthless. The value had evaporated. The market had disappeared. And by the way, there are plenty of cases. This has happened throughout history. Beanie Babies. When Beanie Babies were all the rage, and people were making a ton of money trying to buy and trade Beanie Babies, and then, you know, you had a collector's market and whatever, and the bottom went out. Well, if a Beanie Baby was worth $100 because somebody would pay $100 for it, and now the market falls out, the bottom falls out, and it's only worth $5, nobody pocketed the $95 difference. Now, if you had a Beanie Baby that you paid $5 for, and you then saw the value go up to 100 and you sold it at 100, well, then you have that nice profit and they are going to suffer a loss. And their money, did it truly evaporate? No. In that case, they traded it off to somebody. But again, what they can get for it, that is where money does evaporate. So don't think that there is somebody who is getting rich off of this money evaporating. No, when the market takes a tumble like this, people are less confident about what they are worth. They revalue the market. They revalue stocks. That's what happens. I wish I could tell you otherwise, but I can't. All right, so that was our question from Gail. Our second question today comes from Doug in San Francisco. And I think I know this, Doug. I think this Doug is a lacrosse playing friend of mine, etc., who likes to sometimes stick a fork in me. But he was writing after my most recent column, and he said, "Dear Chuck," and this may be a different Doug, but it would be like the one I know to do this. He said, "Dear Chuck, you wrote a column that said people should basically be ready to hold for a market cycle, but in the same column, you said they should rebalance. Doesn't that contradict each? Don't those problems contradict each other? And aren't you kind of turning against your own advice?" It's a good question. It's a good question. And it comes out of a column that involved two recent guests, Brad Lemonsdorf from the Ranger Equity Bear ETF and Brian Frank. And I think I talked about this column last week. So basically, Brian Frank said, you got to buy a fund preparing to hold it for a market cycle. And I agreed with that statement in my column. But Brad Lemonsdorf also said a market cycle would be good. But he said, you know, look, you use turbulent times as a motivation for rebalancing. Rebalancing involves setting your portfolio back on its original asset allocation. I don't consider it to be market timing, but some folks would tell you that it is. They would say, wow, the market's making you feel a certain way. Certain things have gotten hot. You want to go off and, you know, do whatever, take your profits. Okay, they're not incongruous, because although rebalancing involves an action, it's not you're selling the entire fund or you're buying an entirely new fund. It's nothing like that. It's basically saying, look, I rebalance when the following things happen. My portfolio is 5% out of whack, or my portfolio is 2.5% out of whack. I rebalance when the headlines make me nervous because I want to go back to the plan because the plan makes me calm. Or I rebalance once a year, whether I need to or not, or I rebalance once every 3 years if I haven't rebalanced sooner, whatever it might be. The good news is that that's a program that's based on mostly on you and your emotions and your needs and what you want to do. And what it's not typically based on is, oh, I'm going to rebalance today because there's a headline that scares me. So you're not rebalancing away from, say, Brian Frank's fund, where you go, okay, I'm supposed to invest for a full market cycle. I now am watching the fund. The fund is lagging a little bit, etc. Okay, if the fund is lagging, well, rebalancing typically involves culling your winners, the things that have done well, and reinvesting in your laggards. So you're certainly not giving up at the wrong time in the market cycle. If the fund goes up, well, you're still not giving up in the wrong time in the market cycle because you're simply saying, hey, I was able to benefit by being defensive for this particular time period. I'll take my profits, but I'll maintain a defensive position. I'll just take my profits, the part where it got up above its allocation. So I recognize that the two things may seem in some ways to be contradictory, but I don't consider them that way. I think they're both strategies that are going to help people stay in for the long haul. And that ultimately is pretty important and what needs to happen for the vast majority of investors. So thanks so much for asking. And Doug, if it actually is you, well, we're overdue for a lacrosse game and a chat. So you know how to reach me. If it isn't that Doug, well, thanks for writing anyway. And for anybody else, again, you know how to reach me. It's chuck@moneylifeshow.com. I would love to hear from you and answer your questions on a future show. Up next on Money Life for July 7th, Bob Powell from Retirement Weekly is in for Senior Focus. And then Ernie Cecilia from Bryn Mawr Investment Management joins us to make his first trip in the Money Life Market Call. He's a fundamental investor, and it's going to be interesting. So we'll have some fun with that. Stay tuned. This is Money Life.
Customize an investment portfolio with FlexShares, ETFs designed to pursue targeted goals and to adapt to changing market conditions with both equity and fixed income solutions. For more information, go to FlexShares.com.
Your retirement years are coming. Are you financially ready for your retirement?
You know, I've been thinking.
Oh, that would explain the beads of sweat.
Don't let this happen to you.
I'm afraid it's just not sufficient to refinance your home.
Where shall I go? What shall I do?
My advice to you is to start drinking heavily.
Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen. I think something is happening.
Bob Powell knows where to turn and how to help you with your financial needs as you plan for or live in retirement.
Here I come to save the day.
It's all here as Retirement Weekly's Bob Powell joins Money Life every week for Senior Focus.
Senior citizens, although slow and dangerous behind the wheel, can still serve a purpose.
Well, Bob Powell serves a purpose of helping senior citizens get a better handle on what they need to do to live a safe, happy, comfortable, and prosperous retirement. He does that in multiple ways. He is a columnist in the Retire Mentor section at MarketWatch.com, same place that I work, but he is also the editor of Retirement Weekly, which is a MarketWatch product. So if you find his columns, you will find links to Retirement Weekly. And if you want help doing that, then follow him on Twitter, where he's at RJPIII. And that way, when he tweets about his work, you will be able to find it and follow the links to learn more about Retirement Weekly. Bob Powell, welcome back to Money Life.
Chuck, thanks for having me on.
So I love where you're going this week because everybody understands costs matter when it comes to saving and investing. But of course, they tend to think of it in terms of cost matter when I'm buying a mutual fund or what have you. They don't always think about it when it comes to advisory fees. And Now there's reason for them to be thinking about it, isn't there?
Well, there is. So the start of this story begins with the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, where they are now launching I wouldn't call it an investigation, but they're reviewing how advisors disclose fees to clients. And so that got me thinking, what does need to be disclosed in terms of fees and what should investors or clients look for from advisors with respect to fees? So I've started making some phone calls. I've got some emails back from the North American Securities Administrators Association, Knut Rosted, Brightscope. And here's a couple things to think about. I haven't written the story yet, so you know, consider this the column in process. First off is, you know, the North American Securities Administrators Association, they have something called the Model Fee Disclosure Resource Center, which includes a investor advisory based on research that was conducted by NASA and industry representatives. And they've created a model disclosure table for miscellaneous fees. And the fees that they looked at are miscellaneous. They're not commissions. They're the fees that investors are charged for various account-related services. But that would be a good place to start, is www.nasaa.org, and look for the Model Fuel Disclosure Resource Center. It covers some of the things that are important, but not all of the things. And so to get to the rest of the story, Knut Rosted suggests from the Center for Fiduciary Studies that investors should require that their advisor or broker provide a full and complete disclosure, not just on the advisory fees, but also on the underlying investment expenses. And he says that should be done as a good faith estimate at the outset of an engagement, and then it should be done thereafter at least annually. And it should be an actual accounting once you do it annually. And of all the underlying expenses should include the investment expenses paid by the client, any third-party payments paid to a firm, and the advisor should deem this a core responsibility and not necessarily tell the client that they should go figure it out. So if you want help there, there's a website I'd recommend that Knut recommends, and it's called it's www.campaignforinvestors.org. And they have a website section on their website called Calculate Your Investing Costs. It takes you through a questionnaire that helps you figure out what you should be paying for what. And then the last thing comes from Brightscope, which, as you know, tracks not only 401k fees but also the investment advisory world. And his suggestion was that you first find out whether your advisor is a fiduciary or not, and then ask the advisor how they're paid, whether it's fee or commission or fee and commission. If it's a fee, you know, is it flat or based on AUM, assets under management? And then also, you know, determine what services the client really gets for that fee. And then compare that to other advisors if you haven't selected an advisor. Or maybe if you have an advisor, it might be worth, you know, kicking the tires and doing a little fee comparison. You know, as you know, fees are just one part of the equation. You know, I think the equally, if not more important part is the advisor being able to meet your investment objectives, your personal investment objectives. So, you know, things could cost 5% and meeting your goals, and that's all well and good. But if you're paying 0% and not meeting your goals, I'd say that's, you know, you've now cut off your nose to spite your face.
Well, exactly right. And it becomes that also becomes that muddying factor of what's reasonable. You know, people have asked me, well, how much would you pay for a mutual fund? And I'm like, well, you know, if the fund could consistently deliver a 50% return, you know, it could be charging double digits. I'd be happy with that. But since it can't ever guarantee me that, no thanks, I'll take something a lot closer to zero.
Yeah.
And you have that when you layer fees on as well. The other side of this is that I think there are a lot of times when people look at fees and they literally are upset by pennies without necessarily gauging what they're really getting for their money. And they're going, you know, I could have done this cheaper someplace else. And maybe you could have, but you might not have gotten the service, right?
Yeah, I think that's really important. So, you know, maybe to Knut's point is that you get everything in writing. There's a full and complete disclosure of what you're paying and what you're getting in return for those services. What Knut mentioned to me was this, you know, you wouldn't have a plumber come into your house or a general contractor or an electrician and not have this kind of estimate in advance and knowing what you're paying for the services that are being delivered. You know, it's a little bit different with advisors, but it shouldn't be all that much different. You should be able to get a sense of what things will cost and what you'll get in return for it. Now, what you get in return for it, I think it's a little bit harder, right? If I hire an electrician to put a ceiling fan in, I know the ceiling fan is in and it works. When I hire an investment advisor and I say my investment objective is to get 6% per year, with this kind of risk, with tolerance, blah, blah, blah. Well, the thing about 6 or 8% per year, whatever my investment objective is you can't guarantee that, right? No investment advisor can guarantee that. And the best that they can do is to say, well, you know, within one standard deviation, two-thirds of the time it will be, you know, your returns will be between 3 and 12%. And then, you know, within two standard deviations, You know, it may be, you know, minus 5 to plus 20.
Right.
So there's no exact science on the return side. So one of the things that obviously you have to think about is, okay, I'm paying for this range of returns, right?
Yep.
And hopefully that range of returns bears out over time, not just 1 year.
Exactly. Right? And folks, if you want to check out what Bob is coming up with, as you pointed out, it's a column in progress. You'll find that column at marketwatch.com in the Retirementor section. If you want help finding it, follow Bob on Twitter at RJPIII, and that way you'll get a tweet when he actually has it up there. Bob, thanks as always. And
Chuck, thanks for having me on the show.
And have a great vacation. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Thank you. Talk to you in a couple weeks.
Up next, it's the Market Call. Ernie Cecilia from Bryn Mawr Trust makes his maiden voyage when Money Life returns right after this message.
At Hightower, providing the best fiduciary advice to every advisory client is not just a job. It's a legal duty. Sophisticated asset management, lifetime financial planning, and wealth management solutions. At Hightower, it all adds up to peace of mind. Visit HightowerAdvisors.com to learn more about the Hightower difference.
The problem with most financial shows when it comes to calling the market is that it's one guy's opinion over and over again.
Sell, sell, sell!
But any veteran investor knows that there are two sides to every trade, a buyer for every seller, and vice versa.
Buy, buy, buy!
That's why Money Life brings you a wide range of experts.
I need people who, you know, can work well under pressure.
Each day you get the benefit of a new set of eyes on the market with different methods and decision-making tools. Every day you'll hear a different expert giving their take on the market, on what looks good, what looks bad, and how they feel about some of your stock selections.
This stock is blowing up right now.
You never know who might show up to talk stocks. It may be a famous money manager or someone you've never heard of before.
No!
But you'll always get their straight talk.
Must you always be so blasted honest?
Their straight talk, that is, about what they see happening on the market and where to think about putting your money on the daily Money Life Market Call.
That's right, it's market call time, and we know you love hearing from the folks who come on sort of a regular basis, but you also like being exposed to new money managers who bring their own take to this. And today, well, we've got someone making his maiden voyage here on the market call. His name is Ernie Cecilia. He is Chief Investment Officer at Bryn Mawr Trust in Pennsylvania. If you want more information, it is bmtc.com. If you add /wealth-management, you'll learn a lot more about the firm, which, by the way, has a little bit more than $9 billion in assets under management. Ernie Cecilia, welcome to Money Life.
Well, thank you, Chuck. I'm happy to be aboard.
We always start with methodology because, well, truthfully, buy, sell, and hold recommendations are completely meaningless until somebody understands methodology. You guys have a very simple, straightforward methodology. It's not necessarily unique to you, but you do have your own twist on it. Explain to us how it works so that we know what you look for and what you look out for.
Be happy to do that, Chuck. We are fundamentally driven. That is, we're looking for high quality, and we didn't tend to take a 3 to 5 year time horizon. So when it comes to the equity markets or equities in general, we focus on growth in operating assets and revenue and earnings per share. We look for predictability in operating models, so those models that can produce that earnings and revenue growth, and also definable market niches. And then as you dive deeper, if you will, we like to see high quality management teams, really teams, and, you know, again, how do you determine that? Well, you determine from their track record and what their forecasts are, what they promise they're going to do, whether they actually deliver on those promises, and then conservatively finance balance sheets. So we're looking for companies that generally have low debt. In fact, we screen Chuck for companies that have debt to capitalization less than 50%, and as a matter of fact, most of our portfolio strategies have average debt to caps that are closer to 20 to 25%. So that's what we're looking for is stability. So we look for, in terms of a portfolio at the portfolio level, we'll manage risk through diversification using outside managed solutions in addition to fixed income, and then we'll drive growth through security selection.
Fundamental analysis in many respects has fallen out of favor because, well, momentum can be so much fun and it attracts the headlines. But it also creates issues for folks where if you're looking at fundamentals and you have that mix, it's tough to find the right underlying numbers at the right value. Or is it right now when the market has been going through some of the little fits and starts that we've had that have created volatility? Is that creating opportunity for you, or are we still seeing prices perhaps a little more delicate than you'd like to see them?
It's well said, Chuck. We believe that over long periods of time, earnings growth, generally speaking, drives stock prices. And that's certainly true coming out of the recession and market downturn of 2008-2009. But if you track earnings growth from 2009 near the bottom of the market particularly the end of the recession later in that year, stock prices very much followed. So in a sense, stock prices caught up to earnings, and, or earnings caught up to stock prices. So we find ourselves, number one, so we think fundamental analysis is very important from a long-term perspective. Secondly, to your point about volatility, we use volatility as a means, if you will, to, if you will, engage or initiate our long-term strategy. So in a sense, we find volatility to be somewhat welcome. So it gives us opportunities to execute on a valuation basis. And then thirdly, and I left this out of probably my initial comments, we are very valuation-centric, meaning we spend a lot of time, not just in terms of our screens, but really getting to know and digging inside a company to really determine what we think the fair value is. And so we're very conscious as to where we buy and where we hold, and for that matter, where we may trim or sell. So valuation is a big issue right here. And to your point, we're in a market that, in our view, is fully valued.
So where are you finding things to buy in a market that's fully valued?
Well, we're looking for opportunities that we find to be existing from time to time. And some areas that we have liked is the medical technology side within healthcare. There's been a lot of focus on drug pricing, particularly in this election year. So we have found value in names that, if you will, are in healthcare, certainly, but provide healthcare services more through the technology side. We've also found value, Chuck, in, even though this is often referred to as, quote, the crowded trade, unquote, that is the dividend trade or yield trade, we do think we're going to, in a protracted time of lower interest rates, we certainly have seen that even in this post-Brexit era here, but also we think that dividends will play a bigger role in overall returns. So we think at this stage of the economic market cycle where it's difficult to grow earnings, we think that dividends will play even a bigger role. So if you go back to other times in history, Chuck, say the 1940s, the back half of the 50s, the front half of the 60s, certainly the 1970s, where market returns were generally low, a bigger percentage of the return came from the dividend. And we think that that will actually be the case perhaps in the back half of this decade. So not only dividends, but dividend growth. So we look for companies that just don't pay good dividends or have high yields, but also have grow their dividends at a pretty good rate and can sustain that. So and dividend growth and the ability and propensity to grow dividend is a sign of economic and corporate health. So okay. We find that to be an area that we look at.
Well, let's get a couple of names there. You sort of came out with two different things. Maybe we should start with where you started, which is medical technology. What looks good to you there specifically? And then we'll move over to some of the dividend yielding stocks.
Sure. In the first case, Chuck, medical technology, there's some names that we have utilized in our portfolio strategies. They include Becton Dickinson, the symbol is BDX. The stock has performed really well. We'd like to see that pull back a bit, but again, a name that has performed very well. Another name in that space is Thermo Fisher, symbol TMO, Thermo Fisher Scientific, to be precise. Again, a name that has performed quite well. Lastly, and this is to some extent technology, but it's certainly not so much large pharma, and that is Stryker, which is prosthetics. And there's been pretty good reimbursement rates going on in that area. So Stryker, the symbol is SYK. So those are areas that have run pretty well. On any pullbacks, we'd be inclined to look in that area. Another area that, in terms of the second part, I guess, to your question on the dividend side, names like, for example, a Verizon. Verizon is in a telecom space. Verizon symbol VZ. It has a 4% current yield. It's been growing its dividend 3% over the last 5 years, which is low, but double digits over the last 3 years. The stock has run up rather nicely. We'd be a better buyer close to 50. The stock is in the high, is trading over 55 right now. Another name that is one I think that we all know, and that's General Electric, symbol GE. It's certainly a different company that was a number of years ago. Less reliance, if you will, on the whole financial side. Yield just under 3%. It's been growing its dividend almost 15% over the last 5 years. And, you know, we'd be a better buyer closer to $30. The stock's a little over $31. So those are a couple examples. And let me just add one more, if I could. You didn't ask, but I'll put in a number three here. With this Brexit situation vote to leave the EU that I referred to, we think that companies that are headquartered in the UK but derive a larger percentage of their revenues and earnings from exports will fare better, and we're starting to see that play out at least in terms of their stock prices. One of those names is a company called Unilever, which I think is a really well-known name, household products, food, et cetera, symbol UL, this mm-hmm. is the British version. About 55% of Unilever's revenues come from exports to the emerging markets, lesser so from the U.S., et cetera. Anyway, the point is that as they translate those revenues back into earnings, which are denominated in pounds, with the pound sterling taking a pretty sound beating, if you will, against the dollar, we think that has worked well. So the stock has performed well, actually started performing well right after the Brexit vote. So, again, that's a little bit of a niche.
Okay. Interesting stuff. We got examples of buys, some things that you like, but that you're more in the holding pattern because of pricing, and a little opportunity there as well. Now we're going to find out how you feel about some stocks my audience is particularly interested in.
Play Hold It.
You got to know when to hold up.
Or fold it.
Know when to fold up.
It's Hold It or Fold It time with Ernie Cecilia. He is the Chief Investment Officer at Bryn Mawr Trust. If you want more information, it is bmtc.com. And of course, if you add the /wealth-management, you can learn more specifically about Ernie and what he and his crew are thinking. Hold It or Fold It, you know how it works, so let's just jump right in. We're going to start with a request we got from Jeff in Durham, North Carolina. This is for Visa. It's ticker symbol V.
Hold it. Good top-line growth, 11.5% top-line over the last 5 years. Very strong franchise, one of the areas that we like and has been certainly driving the U.S. domestic economy is consumer spending. Employment is still strong. We think we'll get a decent number this coming Friday. The stock has run up a bit, but certainly hold it at these levels.
So stock having run up a bit, it's not something you can buy right now is on valuation, but hold it and look for that place to buy it.
Absolutely, Chuck.
I'm just taking my time before making the move.
That's a hold on Visa, ticker symbol V. Our next request came from Mark in Mitchell, South Dakota. It's also a V stock. In this case, it's VMware, VMW.
Fold it. Caught up in the Dell EMC deal, Dell acquiring EMC. EMC owns 34% of VMware. One of the things that we see is that storage has become cheap, certainly with the cloud and other companies engaged in that. We just think there are better alternatives in the tech space. So that's a fold it, Chuck.
Okay, so that is a sell on VMware, ticker symbol VMW.
Warning, warning, warning.
Now, I should have actually put Mark in Mitchell, South Dakota's request in the opposite order because his other request that we're talking about today was for EMC Corp, EMC, which you just mentioned in relation to VMW. Is it in the same position or not?
Yes, it is, Chuck. That's a fold it. Again, being acquired by Dell. Again, better alternatives in the tech space. Again, pricing and storage. Really very same story. That's a fold it.
And now for the profit taking.
That's a sell on EMC Corporation. Ticker symbol EMC. Rick in York, Pennsylvania wants to know about Nordson Corporation. That's ticker symbol NDSN.
That's a hold it, Chuck. strong top and bottom line, nice manufacturing company. It's a name that we have in our client portfolios. I will say the stock has performed well. We'd like to see that come back a bit. Our fair value is more in the 70s. That is the $70 area. The stock is over 80 right now. It had a really good earnings report recently, and the stock has moved up. But that's certainly a name that we would hold, and a name, if it came back, we'd probably add to.
So you like the dividend, good, solid company, not in a position to buy more, but a solid hold on Nordson Corporation, ticker symbol NDSN.
And look at all the money I'm making.
And last, for Dale in London, Ohio, it's Nike. The Class B trades under NKE.
Well, Nike's a name, actually, we have owned on behalf of our clients for quite some time. I definitely say that would be a hold it, an excellent franchise with strong top and bottom line growth. Stock is quite expensive. We like it long term. Again, would like to see it come in a little bit in terms of price. And that's consistent also, Chuck, with our general view that we see the market is fairly valued. But certainly great franchise, and that's a hold.
No money changes hands today.
So no money changes hands on Nike NKE just because the price a little bit higher than Ernie would like to see. But again, as you had with the other holds, if the right things were to happen for the market, which some people might say are the wrong things, prices having to come down, he would be looking to buy and be opportunistic. And I'd like to take this opportunity, Ernie, to thank you for joining us. This was great. I hope we get a chance to do this with you again sometime soon.
My pleasure, Chuck. Anytime. You have just a great day.
Ernie Cecilia is Chief Investment Officer at Bryn Mawr Trust. If you want more information, you'll check out their website. It's bmtc.com. And if you want to know which stocks Ernie talked about that some other guests have had, some cases similar, some cases very different opinions, well, you'll stay tuned through this break. As we wrap up the July 7th edition of Money Life, I'll tell you how Ernie compared before we go home today. Stay tuned.
PowerShares provides a different take on traditional asset categories while providing advisors and investors with innovative investment opportunities. For more information, go to powershares.com. Invesco Distributors Incorporated.
We're back on Money Life. That was fun. I hope you enjoyed listening to Ernie Cecilia. And you heard me say at the end, so here's the code, right? I generally think if an interview goes well and I have the time to say it, which I don't always, I'll let somebody know by saying, hey, I hope we get a chance to have you back. If you hear an interview and you go, oh my God, I would never want Chuck to have this guy back, you need to write me, chuck@moneylifeshow.com, and say, Chuck, I really just liked that interview. Don't rush. And we don't rush anybody. Nobody's allowed to be on the market call more than once every 3 months anyway. But we do not rush. Okay, so let's talk about a couple of things that you just heard on the show. Right? You had Verizon being a buy. And we had Brian Yackman on the show, and he was actually moving away from Verizon. But he's not the only one who has talked about it. You had Mag Black Scott on her last appearance. Chris Bertelsen had also had Verizon as buys. Then you had Nike, which was in Hold It or Fold It. And Brian Yackman and Mike Mattioli both had it as buys. Andy Swan from Likefolio, remember him? That's on the internet sentiment sort of thing. He had it as a hold. And Oliver Pirsch, not on his most recent visit, but 2 times ago, he loved Nike and had Nike then as a buy. We haven't talked about too many of the other stocks. Visa has been one that has gotten some play on this show. It has been a little while, but I want to say it was Rich Maroney who talked about it. And EMC, I believe, was actually discussed by Charles Roteblatt as a cell, saying, okay, there's not much, or as a cell, saying that there was not much upside, it was time to get out. Right? That was a recent one. So that's what we had there. Now, tomorrow we will have Doug Roberts talking about the Fed. Next week we will have Carl Mills from Jerika Mills and Kiefer. We'll also have Bob Dahl from Nuveen talking about his 10 predictions for the year, which we talked about back in January, and how they're shaping up now. But tomorrow we'll also have Ed Schill from the QCI Balanced Fund. He will be here for the Money Life Market Call. That is going to be fun. Always is interesting to talk with him. Greg McBride will be here. We'll have other stuff too. So hopefully you will join us tomorrow, and each and every day you'll make living the money life part of what we do. All right. I want to thank my guests again from today, Tom Lydon, and of course, Bob Powell, my regulars, Bob, who will be fly fishing next week. So he thinks he's going to be fly fishing. Speaking of that, by the way, we're going to teach you to fish. Yeah. I say that it's not fly fishing, and it's not me and Bob Powell. It's Michael Falk, who's been a guest on the show before, has a new book out called Let's All Learn How to Fish to Sustain Long-Term Economic Growth. Michael's an interesting guy. We're going to be discussing the book with him in the next week or so. So Bob Powell, great for him to be here as he's getting ready to go away. Tom Lydon's also getting ready to go away. I know he'll be here next week. I'm not sure beyond that. And then, of course, Ernie Cecilia. Thanks to Rob Floyd, my producer. I couldn't do it without him and wouldn't want to even if I could. And thanks to you for being here. You make this all worthwhile. Today's Money Life quote of the day comes from Larry Spiedel, who said, diversification is what you hate to own. Yeah, and that makes sense. You know, we talked about rebalancing in that question, and yeah, sometimes it's tough to buy that stuff that diversifies because it's tough to do it. But it's easy to remember that until we do this again the next time, the best thing you can do for your money is not worry too much about it. Have a great day, everybody. See you tomorrow.
The opinions expressed on Money Life are those of the host and guests only and reflect their personal thinking. They are not to be taken as representative policy or strategy of the organization that the host or guest represents. This show is a production of Money Life Radio, Inc., which retains all rights to its content. This broadcast, either in part or in its entirety, may not be retransmitted, reproduced, or rebroadcast without the express consent of Money Life Radio, Inc. This show is an informational service only. The information here is not to be considered a direct and personal recommendation for any individual to make a specific financial decision or transaction, but rather is meant as an informal resource to help investors make informed decisions. Always consult your financial advisor, accountant, or attorney before making any major financial decision. The information provided has been obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable, but is not guaranteed for either its accuracy or completeness.
See you in the morning, boys! I got a life.